Welcome to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast, a radical approach to herbalism, self-care, and the tarot. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 37th episode of the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. This is Karina. Before we get started today, I want to take a moment and honor the folks who are indigenous to Turtle Island, to this land, and all the different tribal groups that are still functioning and existing and have survived generations of colonialism and violence. Here in the Mojave Desert in Joshua Tree, I want to honor the Chemo Wavy people. And since I was born and I lived in Humboldt County for many years, I want to honor the Wiat and Yurok tribes, who are two of the tribes that still are very active and present in that community. But I also think that we should acknowledge these groups of people, these survivors of colonialism, every day and regularly. And we should, especially if we're white people, we should definitely use our voices, use our space, and definitely use our dollar to support Indigenous folks whenever is possible, even if that's $5 or $10. So don't wait until a holiday comes to honor these groups who have lost their land, and also to consider all the groups who've been displaced throughout the world. There's so many situations that are happening throughout the world, and I'm not educated on all of them, but I also read this morning about the things that are happening in Turkey with the Kurdish freedom fighters and the revolt there, and how Trump has been calling for blood. And then we know about the folks in Rojava as well, who have their autonomy threatened, who have created these really amazing femme-run communities. And again, I'm not an authority on this, but I just wanted to hold space for that today on Indigenous Peoples Day and just invite everyone to reframe their perspective. So consider making a donation today and other days to Indigenous groups, grassroots movements, and individuals who are doing important work in their communities to fight for justice and autonomy, and for us to continue to try to push for more accountability from our larger government and from our communities, especially white communities. And that starts with, you know, acknowledging things like cultural appropriation and how that affects us. So today's episode is really something that's exciting. I think that everybody's going to learn a lot. I got to talk with Nikki Miner. She is an amazing human living in New Orleans, working as a kindergarten teacher. And in her spare time, she is a folk herbalist, and she makes a lot of amazing preparations and zines, and is just trying to educate her community, especially Black folks, about self-care and taking back their health. And the amazing thing about what she does on top of everything is that she donates 10% of her sales to the New Orleans Safety and Freedom Fund, which helps folks get bail funds when they can't afford it. And what I really love about, I love so much about what Nikki is doing, and I've been so drawn to just following her work on Instagram, but I think at the end of the interview, she really asks folks to educate themselves on the bail system. And I think that we have to look at the prison industrial complex as one of the greatest human rights abuses of our time, and other systems of incarceration, which include things like immigration, customs enforcement, ICE, and the detention centers. These are really huge human rights abuses of our time, and we need to be thinking about them, and we need to be talking to people, and we need to be donating our money. Especially white folks, and especially white folks that have money and access to intergenerational wealth. Like, that is an absolute necessity for us. It is almost like, I don't believe in sin, I'm not a Christian, but if I were to believe in sin, I would say that hoarding wealth, like for white folks that benefit from white supremacy and colonialism, hoarding wealth is like a cardinal sin. It's like unforgivable. Again, like, I don't know that terminology. Maybe it's not the right thing for me to use, but that's just really what comes to mind. It feels like, it's kind of like a year ago, I did a podcast with Michelle and Brit from Denver, and I remember Michelle said that the lack of ability to address cultural appropriation in herbalism is an abomination. And I feel like abomination is another word that's really persistent in coming up here. So I hope everyone likes this conversation. I hope everyone learns something, and I hope that it motivates folks to think and do a little bit of their own research. One of the mentions that Nikki has on this episode is about an organization in New Orleans called Solitary Gardens, and she'll explain that in better detail. But since talking with Nikki, I did my own research and I started following Solitary Gardens, and they're doing a fundraiser this week. They have I think it's a GoFundMe, and I know that it closes on Friday. So if you are listening to this and you get a chance to check out their work and make a donation, that would be wonderful. A way that you can support this podcast is by joining the Patreon. So for $5 a month, which is something that I ask people that are frequent listeners of the show who are learning something and who are able to put $5 a month aside to this work. If you do join at $5, there's tons of extra content. There's something like more than 70 blogs and vlogs and posts that are about plant magic and herbalism and tarot and ancestor work, etc. There's like so much content on there. There's bonus podcast episodes. And when you join at the $5 a month level, you also get a 20% discount in the apothecary and a 25% discount on tarot appointments. And this is really like, you know, my way of saying thank you for helping me sustain this work. One of the really amazing things about Patreon and the way that it's helped me sustain this podcast is that I've been able to pay my guests. And this is amazing, and it's something that, I mean, I've never been paid to be on a podcast, so this is something I want to continue to do, because I only invite people on my podcast if I really value their work. And I do think, like, even if I'm anti-capitalist, in a capitalist society, value is equated with money, with collateral, and we have to honor that even if we're against it. So by you pledging $5 a month, you can help me continue to, you know, compensate my guests for their time and help them. And also, you know, because I feel like I'm a person who, since I have white privilege and I have other privileges as well, like, you know, but I do feel like I have a lot of education privilege and other resources, and it is a big priority for me to be able to give back and donate about 5% of my income each month. And that really is only possible because of y'all who continue to purchase from the apothecary, continue to book tarot appointments, and continue to join the Patreon and support my work through the Patreon. You can also contact me if you're interested in doing any advertising on the podcast. If it's a project which aligns with what I do, I'm very open to that. But I'm also going to be shifting the apothecary. I've announced this on Instagram and on my mailing list, but the apothecary, like everything that I have right now, I'm kind of paring it down, and things are going to be transforming next year. So if there's something that you're interested in getting, go ahead and check out the website, www.riseupgoodwitch.com, and see if there's anything that you're interested in, and that is a great way to help me sustain this work. Also, if you join the Patreon in October for $5 a month or more, Marisa de la Peña, who is on the last episode, has generously donated two of her tarot decks, How to Deal, to help support the podcast. And I am going to be doing a drawing on the first week of November, and one of the decks will go to a patron who has been supporting the podcast for longer than October, and then one of the decks will go to someone who just joined the Patreon in October. So that gives you, if you decide to join the Patreon in October, it gives you a pretty solid chance in winning a tarot deck and getting to work with a creation made by an amazing person. So check it out at www.patreon.com/riseupgoodwitch. If you're in San Francisco, the Bay Area, this coming weekend on Sunday, October 20th, I'll be at the Witches Confluence, and I'm going to be tabling my creations and also doing a limited number of $25, 6-card, like really short readings. So I would love to meet some of you. If you have been thinking about working with me in tarot, it's a great way for us to connect in real life and do kind of like a short introductory reading. It's a really amazing conference. It's going to be so life-changing and incredible. Last year was such an amazing gift in my life. I went and I had no idea how many people I would meet who had been familiar with my work. And it was just incredibly inspiring and wonderful. So I'm hoping to see some folks there. But beyond all that, please check out Nikki's work. Read about the prison industrial complex. Read about the bail system. Educate yourself. This is a huge issue in our world today. It needs to be discussed every day. We need to know that this is happening. We need to know that this is modern day slavery. I recently watched the documentary on Netflix, When They See Us, and, you know, it's one thing, I think, to read about these cases. Like, I've been reading about and educating myself about the prison industrial complex for more than 10 years, but the more that we learn and the more that we see these stories told in narrative format, it is absolutely heartbreaking to see that these things are happening to human beings at the hands of the state, and that the state still holds all these very systemic racist throwbacks from its roots in this country. So again, this is Indigenous Peoples Day today. This is a thing that we all need to be talking about. And I do think that it is an abomination to not discuss this in our work, especially if we are white people. We need to change the system, and we need to do it with love and compassion, and we need to do it with hope. So I hope everybody, you know, there's a lot of ugliness in the world, but people like Nikki inspire me to keep going and remind me that there's so much work to be done, but individuals can make a huge impact. So I hope that we can all kind of like lead our way towards 2020 with hope and with just like a strong desire for justice and to want to be better and do better in the world every day. Enough with my rambling. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Nikki of Chicory Zine. Talking with Nikki Miner from Chicory Zine. Hi, Nikki. Welcome to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
Doing great.
So if you want to, for folks that don't know about your work, if you want to just tell people a little bit about all the things that you do.
Sure. My name is, again, Nikki Miner. I use she, they pronouns, and I do work with community herbalism in New Orleans, and I make herbal products. I also make herb zines, and part of the proceeds from the things that I make and sell, I donate to the New Orleans Safety and Freedom Fund, which is a bail fund in New Orleans that helps provide financial assistance to folks who are awaiting trial. It helps them quickly get back into the community, back on their feet, and able to recover from any run-ins they might have with the law.
So what do you see as being kind of like the connection between community herbalism and kind of like abolition work?
I think that for me, plants can be used as a tool for liberation. Mm-hmm. My personal motivation for my work in herbalism is that it's a way of resisting and empowering myself in the face of rampant racism in the medical industry. And I think that for particularly for Black folk, that herbalism and the ability to make your own medicine and as a way to empower them against systems that harm them. So a lot of my work is centered around that. It's centered around herbalism that is accessible and herbalism that is practical, because I feel that those are things that are really, really necessary and needed in Black communities, and kind of making that connection with Black communities and herbalism. It's also a way for, I also think it's not only practical, but it also can be spiritually very healing, I think, for Black folk to incorporate plants more into their lives. So I think that a lot of my work is around sort of like that sort of like outreach and advocacy, like getting, like connecting with my community and like letting them know about these tools that they already have around them and these tools that have kind of are always existed in our community. I think that liberates people. And then in the other sense, you know, by donating money to the bail fund, that's also helping to liberate people too, and kind of like kind of abolitionist work in the sense of like, yes, like releasing people from these harmful systems.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's amazing. I love that. So there's so much that I want to like follow up, and I told you in email, one of the reasons I really wanted to interview you, and I feel really called to your work is like, just, I love it when people combine like the mediums of like zines and community liberation work and herbalism. And I think like that doesn't happen as much as it should be. Mm-hmm. So I really honor your work. I guess like one question that I have just like thinking about it, is what kind of came first for you? Did like community liberation work and zines, and I guess there's three little subsets here, but like yeah. community liberation, zines, and herbalism, like yeah. what kind of came first and how did they all integrate?
Sure. So the way that it kind of started is that my mom was an amazing gardener. So plants were all around me. Mm-hmm. We grew fruits and vegetables and flowers. And on the weekends when I was a kid, we'd go to the garden center and my mom would let me pick out like any seeds I wanted. And so, you know, obviously weird combinations of plants were growing around our house, but like that kind of set the seed for like a love of plants. You know, they were just always around me. And so my mom passed away when I was 13. So my connection to plants as an adult is like very much informed by her. So like, that's just something that's always kind of been like an always present, like undercurrent in my life, like a love of plants. And so like, I guess like years later when I was in college, I started like eating organic foods and started like eating a plant-based diet, which I've, you know, been doing for over 10 years at this point. And so that really also kind of was like another major turning point. And I became interested in like connecting with plants more and like the natural world and things like that. And so I had a lot of interest in college. And so I also was like, I kind of wrote for some music magazines and stuff. And so kind of around that time, my friends and I started getting together and like making more like music zines and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so, so I like flash forward to like, you know, post-college. I had, you know, at this point been like out of school for a while. And I came upon this like a cute little herb shop by my house, and I walked in and I fell in love. It was the first time I had ever been in an herb store, and it just felt so right, and I just felt so at home there. And a few months prior to that, it was my birthday, and my friend just randomly gifted me like an herbalism book that was just about like simple recipes, just really basic on just how to make stuff. And so, and in college, like I said, when I was getting kind of into eating a plant-based diet, I started experimenting with making my own body products, because I was really like educating myself and becoming concerned, you know, not concerned, but like just more aware of and trying to be more intentional about like what I was putting into and onto my body. So it just kind of, I don't know, it just sort of came together quite naturally with the herbs and, you know, the zines. And so I just was like, as I was learning more and more about herbs, I was like, wow, this is something I want to share with my community. Like, this can be so empowering to people to know how to make your own medicine, especially when, you know, you might be afraid of bias that you face when you go to a doctor, or you just may not have access to a doctor. And so I just kind of sat, like, had all these things kind of like ruminating in my brain. I was like, how will I, you know, share really basic herbal knowledge with people in the community? And I was just like, oh, I'll just make a zine. And it was awesome, because I hadn't made a zine since I had been in college, you know, so it had been like 7-8 years. And it just, because I think, you know, my full-time job is a public school teacher, and I love my job so much. But I think that, like, you know, after working for a few years, I kind of, you get so kind of wrapped up into work that, like, I think I kind of was like missing that creative side in my life. I wanted to be intentional about, like, the creativity. Like, I didn't want to just be like, oh, cool, I'm just making a zine to make a zine. I was like, oh, I want to, like, make this zine that's, like, an artistic expression that's, like, you know, giving me fulfillment in this other way, but it's also, like, can be a tool for other people. Like, it was really important for me to, like, help other people. And I think, honestly, that just comes from, like, being, I think after school and I became a teacher, like, and working in education and working with children every day, it just became so apparent to me that, like, it's important to help your community and to, like, give back and, like, you know, think about justice and action. And so I didn't want to just make a zine just for the sake of making a zine. I wanted to, you know, help people.
I love all of that. That was amazing. Thank you for sharing all of that. So many questions. So, like, you being a public school teacher is, I think, just an amazing, it's just, like, considering all these other aspects that you're working on, the fact that you're working with, like, very young children in the public school system is so important. So I'm kind of wondering, and this is sort of off the cuff, do you integrate, like, herbal education at all with your students, or do you have a community garden or anything?
That is a dream. I would love to have some sort of like a garden at school. I do work with, like, particularly young kids, but we do talk about, you know, the importance of plants and, like, how plants are all around us and how we need to take care of, you know, nature, and, like, how that impacts our community, how when we take care of our community, how it positively impacts the community around you. But then also, if we don't take care of it, you know, how that can negatively impact. So I do definitely incorporate that for sure. And, you know, we've talked about how plants can be used as medicine and how medicine comes from plants. But yeah, definitely a dream one day would be, like, totally to have, like, an herb garden at school and be able to, like, you know, incorporate that into the school day. But right now I'm kind of, you know, at capacity, because there's, like, so many things that, you know, have to be done, and there's so many, like, factors in place, but it's not something that is not in the works. Like, it's definitely, like, it's on the back burner, but I'm gonna make it happen one day.
That's amazing, and I totally understand why you would be overwhelmed. I mean, I know, like, being a teacher is so much work. It's, like, so much more than full time, you know. Like, my dad was a public school teacher also, so I know that you know, when you go home, you have to do all the curriculum planning and the homework and stuff, which I don't know if you have to do with that young of kids, but yeah, you're doing so much right now. And you also have, like, a library, like a community library that you do.
Yes. Yeah, so the way that sort of works is that I, you know, I collect herb zines. So if I find, you know, cheap herb zines or a zine that I really like, I might buy, like, a few copies or something like that. And so the whole idea is that when I, like, do, like, when I have, like, events where I'm, like, you know, kind of there with, like, my zines and, like, my different, like, herbal preparations, the whole idea is that, like, I have, like, a selection of, like, herb books and zines that are, like soup, like, that are, like, sliding scale or either, like, trade. So, like, if someone comes and they are, like, oh, you know, I am in need of, like, an herb book, you know, we can, like, barter or trade, or, like, people can do, like a sliding scale, or, like, so it's kind of like a, so it's more like a herb book co-op, but ultimately, like, if anyone, you know, like, sees a book or an herb book or a zine in the selection that I have available, like, I just will give it to people But the way that it works is because if someone does is able to like donate a book or, you know, do like a sliding scale donation, I'm able to purchase more books and then circulate more books to people. So that's kind of how it's working right now.
Nice. So it sounds like you have kind of like an anti-capitalist sort of like a collective-based model for your work. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely,
Yeah.
yeah, for sure. Like something that is so important to me is like this idea of like community and like collective liberation. I think that we all have the tools like in us to like empower ourselves, but I think that it's best when you're leveraging each other's like people's strengths. And for me, it's also really tied to like racism in the world, because it's just like the racism, like it keeps us all from being fully human, right? Like if one group is being like oppressed, but then the oppressors, like they are sacrificing like this, their like bits of their humanity in a sense, because they're like viewing people as like less than. So I think it's this whole idea of like if we are all like leveraging like collective strength from people, like or from people in the community, like it's like kind of like we all do better when we all do better, if that makes any sense. Yeah, like that's to me. So I definitely have like a very like collaborative, like community-based like mindset, if that makes any sense. Because I think that's the only way we're gonna like make progress as like people in a society.
Oh my God, yes, absolutely. And that's like also what I love is, I think like for me as a white person, it's easy for white folks, I think, to like ignore or turn our blinders on to these like really extreme systemic issues like mass incarceration. But I think like when you're doing healing work, it's my belief like healing work should be with the understanding that like liberation means like liberation for all oppressed people. It's not, healing is liberation. It's not like, we're not in a vacuum. Like none of us are in a vacuum with our own life or our own issues or whatever. So I think like you addressing that is really, really powerful and important. What is it like? Are you from New Orleans?
Yeah, born and raised.
And did you go to school there, like college?
Yeah,
So you've all
I went to the University of New Orleans, so I've only ever lived here. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. What do you so I know a little bit about the climate. It's like very, very humid.
Yeah.
What kind of plants like really thrive there that you
Skullcap. Like blue vervain, goldenrod, dandelion, elder, bidens are plants that grow really well around here. And willow, oak, pine.
And do you grow a lot of the plants that you work with?
This year I have started to, I have like a little container garden going, and so right now I have some holy basil and some lemon balm that's popping off. So, yeah.
That's amazing. I love that combination. Do you teach workshops? So you're talking a lot about like, you make these zines and you're trying to make this information really accessible to people and easy for people to reach and understand and empower them with that information. Do you, besides doing zines, do you teach workshops?
That's actually a goal of mine. That's something that I hope to do this year or the next. I've had, a couple people approach me, but it just still hasn't come to fruition yet. Just, but like definitely a couple of folks have like expressed interest in having me do like some classes or workshop. But ultimately, like, yeah, that's what I want to do, is to be able to give people tools, and so I think the way that that is best done is like obviously through like a class or a workshop. So fingers crossed that the right opportunity comes at the right time.
Yeah, definitely. Again, like you already have so much on your plate, so I imagine that would be a challenge. So I wanted to ask you a little bit more about like you said you in college you made like music zines. Was that like local, you like writing about local music?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, and that was kind of like your introduction, like, to the world of zines.
Yeah, and around that time, there was this kind of like this anarchist bookstore that was in our city, and so I would go there, and like that was the first time I had ever seen zines, and I was just like, "What is this? This is so cool!" And in high school, I was like really, really into music and like kind of just more into like the whole like I was like really fascinated with punk culture. Like growing up, I went to like a pretty small, like conservative private school. And so like I think that I kind of like I felt like people I instead of going I think like leaning into that, I think that like by the time I graduated high school, I was just like railing against that. And so it was just kind of and I was always like a I in college I studied nonfiction writing and history. So I was always really into like writing and like poetry and stuff. So when I visited this like kind of like crusty like punk like anarchist zine bookstore collective, I was like, what is this place? This is magical. It's all of the things I love. It's music and angst and it's writing. So I just was like, I have to make these. And so I started making zines and interviewing musicians and going to shows and stuff. So
Amazing. Is that Anarchist Collective still there?
it's not. It's
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of like dissolved, and then they had another spot in the same neighborhood called the Rubber Flower Library and Bodega. So it was like it was a little flower shop downstairs, but they had all these super cool used books and like a pretty big like zine library. And then yeah, that place just it didn't survive. So there's a lot of gentrification going on in the neighborhood where that place was located. So and there's a lot of like Airbnbs in our city. And that's like, totally impacting housing and like, small businesses like that. So I'm pretty sure that that space probably got turned into some like new swanky gastropub or like an Airbnb or something. So yeah,
Yeah.
there's really not a very large zines scene, I would say, here in the city at this time. And we did have a New Orleans Zine and Comic Book Festival, but that I think this past spring was the last year they're gonna do it. So it's like a little bit like, oh, but there are definitely people who make zines here, but the scene is not quite as large as it is in like other cities, I think.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting what's happening to like zine culture because I made zines in high school and it was a huge part of my life and I lived in Portland 15 years ago or something when and I also volunteered at a similar sounding like anarchist collective bookshop and zine shop that now is also not there anymore because of gentrification. And I think yeah, that's why I love to see when people are still like old school making zines. Like it looks like your zines are like cut and paste. And it's I guess that's just like evolution and with technology and social media and all these things, like there's so much accessibility now, I think, in terms of social media and information can be passed, and that's something that's really positive. But yeah, sometimes I miss like the actual days of like holding a paper zine in your hand.
Yeah, and for me, like, also, like, there's a really great, there's an herbalist, and she's a zine maker, and she's from New York, and I think her Instagram is like Ballast Botanicals, but she made a zine that was about, and she's also a teacher too. Really interesting. And so she made this zine about teaching with zines, but she talks about how like zines are also like this like form of like liberation. So I'm like really interested in that idea too, because in collecting, because I have like a collection of herb zines, and so in collecting the zines, I just like just fell in love with this idea of like of accessible herbalism, because it's just like zines are so accessible. They're cheap, they are portable, and like I'm also like railing against this idea of like I took this class, this herb class a couple years ago, and the person instructing the class, it was a great class, enjoyed it, but the person instructing the class was like, oh, I don't really if an herbalist doesn't have this XYZ book, then I don't really, basically like I'm kind of like wary of them. And it was a Rosemary Star book. And I was like, yeah, like I feel like that's not, like I'm not, I kind of just like was like, no, like I was like really against that, because I'm just like, first of all, that's like not accessible to a lot of people. Like a lot of people don't have the money or the time to, you know, buy that said book. And then, you know, don't get me wrong, like Rosemary Gladstar has written like great books. They're basic, they're nice because they are pretty widely available. And of the herb books you can buy, like her books are inexpensive just because they're very widely circulated. But it's such a like generic, homogenous, like just like whitewashed like herbalism book. So I'm just like, really, like, is this what you deem as someone being like a quote unquote herbalist, is them like having this book? Whereas like I felt like when I look at my herb zines, it's just like such a variety, because a lot of herbalists, depending on where they live, are writing about herbs in their bioregion. So you're getting more of a range. And I saw more diverse voices in the herbs and the across, you know, the perspectives that I was getting from these like herb zines. And then like I also just like, it's this idea of like you're not supporting this like big capitalistic like book, you know, a publishing company by like, or like, you know, by purchasing this Rosemary Gladstar book. Like a lot of times, like herb zines are kind of like mine, like someone's like printing them on their own, or like it's a small press or like a small publishing or like press that you're supporting through like buying these zines. So in that sense, like that's why I'm like really into the idea of like herbal education through zines, because it's like for $5, you know, someone who might be living a transient lifestyle, if they have recipes in there that, you know, and they don't have health insurance, if they have recipes, you know, in a book of that have items that are easy for them to like locate and purchase, and they can like keep in their back pocket, to me that's like much more effective than like giving, you know, like a Rosemary Gladstar book. Does that make sense?
Yes, 100%. And I think that goes back to like what you were saying kind of earlier. You said, you know, I'm a community herbalist, and then you're like, well, I don't know if I'm an herbalist because I don't have the professional training. And I really relate to that, because I also have never been to any herbalism school. It was something that like I learned by having a garden. Like I did a lot of my, I was working in social services and healthcare, which is what I've done most of my adult life, like to like survive in capitalism or whatever. And then like my own healing practice, because it's a lot, you know, doing community work is really draining. And I worked in, you know, with a lot of like unhoused people and people that were dealing with like intergenerational trauma on all different levels. And that's a lot to take on. And I'm sure you experienced that just like being a kindergarten teacher. So it's like my self-care practice was like my garden and like growing these plants and like doing these new moon harvests and stuff and full moon harvests. And yeah, like so I don't, I kind of like really relate to what you're saying about like being weary of using that word herbalism, and it's because there's so much gatekeeping. And when you look at like, yeah, like when you, it's like what you said about like the accessibility point, and also, you know, like Rosemary Gladstar is amazing and like has so much to offer, but we shouldn't be putting people on pedestals, I think, like in the herbalism world, because plant medicine comes from like all parts of the world. It's not a capitalist venture. It's not, you know, there's so much. Yeah, there's a lot of there's a lot of like ways that like institutional oppression like shows up in a lot of herbalism communities.
Absolutely, absolutely, 100%. I could not agree more. And I also just think, like, you know, Rosemary Gladstar in her books, like, I've learned a lot from her books and like from her videos. Like, it's a great tool. I do like it's accessible in the sense that, like, it's like, you know, she's very popular. Like, she's, you know, you can look her up on YouTube. You can probably find a used book of hers for under $20. However, you know, she's talking about working with herbs like elder, which is something that grows here in Louisiana like wildfire. And it's something that has been used here by like the HOMA, which is the land that New Orleans is, you know, we occupy HOMA land. So it's like thinking about how like this is an herb that has been used, you know, for thousands of years amongst indigenous people in the Southeast United States. And nowhere in her books is there a mention of how like that's traditionally used, or that it was like traditionally used with by those communities. So like I just also find like frustration with that. So like, you know, when I first got into herbalism, like, yeah, it was just, I was like, you know, if those books were like really, gave me a really great foundation. But then, like, after like kind of cycling through those books and like really internalizing the content in it, I was like, okay, like I want to go like deeper than this. This feels really surface.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's all about like context and like taking healing to like a level of like liberation and addressing like systems of oppression, which a lot of, yeah, like a lot of herbalists just, they're not, I don't know, like they're not at that point, or they won't be at that point. They don't want to be at that point. And, you know, hopefully we'll, you know, hopefully we'll see that change. And like, as people start to address, you know, as folks are addressing privilege and oppression within healing systems and all that. So,
yeah. And I felt like for me, it's just like, as a Black woman, like I feel like I can't not address these things in my work. Like, yes, it would be easy to, and I'm not like, I like, really, it's no shade, because I know plenty of like amazing Black herbalists who like that, they, you know, they make beautiful medicine and preparations, and their work isn't necessarily centered around like social justice, or, you know, like liberation, or, you know, abolition or anything like that. But like, you know, so I get it, but it's just like, for me, I think like I don't, that's just like kind of like who I am. I'm just like, I have to, it's like making, like try, like working towards like a fair and more equitable world to live in, like, is just at the intersection of just like, I try to make it put it at the intersection of like everything that I'm like outputting into the world. Does that make sense? Like, so I like, I don't want to like shade on people who like choose not to do that. Maybe they're doing it in other ways. They're just not incorporating it into their herbalism. But yeah.
I think that's very fair of you to say, because it is, yeah, it, we don't know what people are doing in their everyday life. And then that brings into like a whole thing about, and this is something I'm like dealing with social media. It's like, I don't like the idea that like some people are like, you have to be like, you know, performative allyship, basically. Like, you, what are you doing behind, you know, what are you actually, where are you putting your money? Where are you, how are you educating yourself, et cetera? But like, you don't need to like perform that for everybody all the time. So I think that's like an important thing to consider as well.
I do, but I do want to push back a little bit on that, because like, I do think that it is important, even if you're a white person in herbalism, I do think it's important to like name, you know, like name certain things, just because it's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, just totally. I'm thinking about within the context of like Western herbalism, it is like so whitewashed that I feel like if you're going to be a white person like working in herbalism, like you need to like, even if your work isn't like, you know, doesn't intersect specifically with like social justice or like, you know, community, you know, outreach or whatever, like you need to name that. You know, like, yeah, you need to name that. Like, you need to somehow, like, there should be some sort of accountability, because it's like, you know, especially if you're using medicines and like herbs that are traditionally used from like the African diaspora or like indigenous communities, I really think it's important to like name that. Like, yes, I'm preparing and making a preparation, you know, with these particular herbs, but like, let me give you a little historical context on like where this came from. You know, like, does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Like, because absolutely. I think in that way, and not doing that, if you're a white herbalist and like you're just profiting off of it, like, you know, you're just, it's kind of, it's harmful to oppress communities, if that makes any sense.
Oh, totally. Absolutely. Thank you for clarifying. I think like when I'm talking, yeah, it's kind of like a bigger issue, but when I'm talking about like performative allyship, I think like, you know, if you're, it's kind of like if you're, especially if you're a white person and you're like, paying a lot of lip service to things that you're not actually doing, I think that's not where we want to be right now personally. But I definitely think like, especially like since you talked about the link to like native plants and plants that were used by indigenous groups specifically, and the co-optation and the lack of context that a lot of white herbalists, and especially like the discussion around like wild foraging and wild crafting and stuff, I think those are really important. So yeah, I totally honor you mentioning that. And I totally agree with you. I think like white herbalists, you know, like we need to be giving back to communities of color that like our ancestors have like fucked over and stolen from historically, like not to repeat those not to repeat those harms, basically, in, you know, in our lives today with like cultural appropriation and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think even just like naming those things like in the work that you do, like that is like an act of social justice in and of itself. You don't have to like you said, do this like performative, like, you know, sort of dance that people sort of do. And in fact, I think that's like way more harmful, like the performative activism. So yeah, I appreciate you mentioning that.
Yeah, awesome. So I wanted to ask you about, you know, like there's so much, like, and I love this conversation. You're like, you're sharing so much amazing information, and there's like so many things that I want to ask you about, but I want to go back to like your, and you mentioned this at the very beginning, like your work with, is it the New Orleans Safety and Freedom Fund?
Yes.
That you donate to?
Yeah. So I will tell you it's kind of how I became aware of this organization. So a couple of years ago, I was like sent an email, and they were inviting like educators in the city, because they're like, it's really important that teachers, you know, are aware of how incarceration impacts the population of our city. You know, a lot of the students I've worked with over the years have been impacted by incarceration. And so, you know, we're working with families that are impacted by incarceration. So it's really important to be aware of like how exactly that, how the system works. And so the New Orleans New Orleans Safety and Freedom Fund has basically an experience that you can join them in. So it's like a group of public defenders here in the city that kind of run the fund. And so they invite, you know, like small groups of people from the community. This particular day, they were focused on educators. And so you got to go to the court and watch people's first appearance. And so your first appearance is like after you've been arrested, but you haven't been charged with the crime. Mm-hmm. And that's where they set your bail. And so I sat in court for 2 hours, like watching people just like, you know, for really what I feel like are pretty small infractions. Like all of the crimes are like nonviolent. It was like petty theft or, you know, marijuana charges. And the amounts that the bails were set at were astronomical and outrageous. Mm. And so there was this one mother, it haunts me. And she, I forget exactly like what happened. I think like it was something like nonviolent. I think it might've been theft. And I think there might've been like, I don't know, like something with like marijuana, like with weed or something. And so she was just like sobbing and begging. She was like, please, please, please. Like, I can't afford that. Like, she's just like, I'm gonna, you know, like lose my apartment. I'm gonna lose my job. And like, she had kids and stuff. And just thinking about if this woman can't make her bail, she sits in jail, which means she's not working, which means she's not with her kids, which means her kids could be taken away, which means her car could be taken away, which means her apartment could be taken away, which means she loses her job, all over like something like so small, like something that wasn't like, that was a nonviolent crime, you know. And you know, so I just was like outraged, just angry and just horrified, and just thinking about like, if I were caught in the wrong place at the wrong time, like that could be me, you know. And especially living in New Orleans and Louisiana, we are the incarceration capital of the world. We incarcerate the most people. So like, and there's obviously like a lot of, you know, bias in like law enforcement here. We have, you know, you can look up the history of the Angola Penitentiary, mm-hmm. which is our state penitentiary. It's like, just, it's horrible. And so, I was just like, I have to do something. I have to help. And so right around this time is like when I had kind of started first going by the herb shop that was in my neighborhood, and I was interning for them. And so, and I had, you know, made the zine and stuff like that. And so I was just like, wow, what if I sell the zine and I, you know, raise a little bit of money for this bail fund, because I really wanted to donate to this bail fund, because it was just really pressing on me how just unfair this is, like literally to keep people in prison because they can't afford to buy their freedom. And so, and just seeing how it impacted like brown and black people in our city, and then also seeing how the charges that were the highest were related to weed, and thinking about how weed is like, for a lot of oppressed people, that's like medicine to help them deal with like, you know, toxic stress mm-hmm. of progressive racism and like intergenerational trauma. And there was one guy that was there the day that I had the experience of being able to see the first appearances with the New Orleans Freedom and Safety Fund. And it was a guy that was arrested for battery of a partner. And so while this woman got caught with like, I think a couple of grams of weed, had like a $3,000 bail charge, this guy was arrested for battery of a partner, and his bail was like, charge was like $50.
Fuck.
So I was just like, this is horrible. And I was like, so if I can donate, you know, whatever I can to like keep someone out of jail, like I'm gonna do it. You know, I was like, this is literally like it could ruin someone's life. And I was just like, over something so like just over money. Cause it's like if you're rich enough, you know, you can just buy your freedom. Even if you commit a violent crime, you could essentially buy your freedom and get out and essentially commit the same crime if you want to. And so I just, yeah.
Wow.
I don't know where it came from. And then I started, and so then as I was interning for at the herb shop, you know, I started experimenting and making more like salves and tinctures and things. And I was like, oh, well, I'm going to start selling tinctures and donate part of that to the bail fund. And then it kind of just expanded out from there. I started making more products, but still continuing to donate 10% to the New Orleans Safety and Freedom Fund.
Wow, that is so horrible what happened to that woman. And it's, yeah, that's just, it's the fact that it happens every day all over the country. And I didn't know that New Orleans was the incarceration capital of the country.
New Orleans, tons of people.
Louisiana. Yeah.
But I mean, New Orleans is, you know, we have an extremely high incarceration rate here for sure. But Louisiana in general, we're the top for incarceration.
Wow. Yeah, that's really horrifying. And like the bail bond system is such a disgusting exploitative aspect of capitalism and the prison industrial complex. It's so disgusting. And I started donating some of my I try to donate about 5% of what I make every month, just in general, either if it's to individuals or to organizations, but like grassroots organizations. And the bail funds, I can't even like say anything really that hasn't been said before, but it's something that we all really need to be aware of, especially white folks. Like, we really need to know about like how corrupt and disgusting and systematically violent the bail industry is, and like the prison industry is. So just like really honoring again that you bring that work into your herbalism practice and your healing work.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah, it's like every time, like even just like thinking, it's just so awful. So like, I don't know. I think like, it's not anything that I think I could have even like imagined, you know, I've been doing chicory for about a year. I guess I've been kind of practicing herbalism and like taking classes and really doing a lot of self-study for the past 3 years. And like, I would say 5 years ago, that's like not something I would have ever imagined for myself, but it just makes so much sense to be able to I'm feeling so much gratitude for just like plants, because it's like allowed me to like come together and like kind of combine all of the things that are like really important to me. And so, mm-hmm.
Yeah, amazing. So I wanted to ask, like, just because we've talked about it we've talked about it a lot, like New Orleans in general, and just like the fact that you've lived there your whole life, and you said something about gentrification. How do you think, you know, like the city where you are, like the place where you are, like really informs your practice and like how you've seen the city change over the years?
I would say, as far as like how my personal experience impacts my practice, well, one, my mom passed away when I was fairly young. My mom was terminally ill, so like also just growing up and just seeing how she was treated in like hospitals as a Black woman, And then, so that definitely stayed with me, you know, and just, and then also I think just healthcare, the public healthcare system here is like, you know, it's poor. And just like, it, I guess because like, you know, it's the South, you know, we're kind of Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, we're kind of like the top three in like all the, like the worst categories. So just thinking of, so that definitely just kind of embracing more of just like, you know, plants in general, you know, to try to like, you know, plant-based diet to like be healthier. And then also thinking about like, oh, using plants as like tools to like not only nourish you, but to heal your body. And then just thinking about how, you know, depending on what neighborhood you live on, live in, if you, if something happens and you call the cops, it could be two hours or it could be 2 days, you know, and thinking about how, like also using herbs for that, like to be able to like, or I guess maybe that would be more in the vein of like, kind of like street medics, which I also like think is and like so cool. And so just thinking about, yeah, just, I don't know, just thinking about how many, you know, communities there are here within this, like neighborhoods and stuff within the city where like people are like really like very, like there are a lot of impoverished areas still in this city. And so just like seeing that has also just like really, really influenced me to make that, make, you know, especially my zines with like the things that I put in them, like really accessible, you know, and like, and I didn't really see that in a lot of like, I guess, other herb zines that I had, you know, looked through and bought and purchased. They're all great and beautiful and informative, and I've learned so much from them. But I was just like, you know, someone who lives, who's like, you know, lives in the hood and who's a mother of five and like, you know, is not going to be able to access a lot of the things, you know, and in some of these herb books that I have or some of these herb scenes that I'm looking at. So it just seeing, you know, communities and just thinking about how to like bridge the gap between that. Because I've, you know, run into you know, people from all walks of life in the city, and like people are, you know, generally pretty interested in like plants as medicine, but it's all about the way that that is like packaged and like kind of given to people or taught to people or shared with people. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
And so like just seeing, I guess I saw the need in the communities, but I was just like, how do I like, you know, do this with like plants and sort of bridge that gap, you know, between this like really, really like I don't know. Yeah.
Amazing. I wanted to ask, because you brought up street medics, and that's such an important thing to consider. Have you done anything like that?
No, but I really want to. I keep someone that I, a collective that I follow, I've been following online for a while, is Hood Herbalism. They're a Latinx-based collective in Southern California, but they do a ton of like cool like street medic trainings and like work with like herbs and reclaiming and like decolonizing herbs and things like that for communities of color. But yeah, there's not really as much of that here in the city. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. It definitely does, but it's like, I feel like it's more of a West Coast thing. So, but eventually I'm hoping I can get to one, because I would love, I feel like that would be so important to have within the New Orleans community, because we have a really high murder rate here. And just thinking about how like if people in these really impoverished communities that still exist here in New Orleans, like, you know, how they could really benefit from this and how they could be able to, so many more lives will be saved. Because it's like, you can call 911, but if you live in the hood, like, and, you know, somebody uptown, you know, in one of these fancy antebellum mansions calls 911 at the same time, who do you think they're going to send the ambulance first? And so thinking about how minutes literally, like, can, like, make or break or, you know, save someone's life, and thinking about how, like, I feel like if anything, like new, there, like street medics training should be happening like all the time in New Orleans, right? Because like we have so many, like there's so many people that die by gun violence, and like bystanders that die by gun violence in some of these neighborhoods. So, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Do you have people that you're work? You do so much, and I keep asking you things, and you're like, someday I want to be able to do that. And that totally makes sense because you're one person, and you can't take on all of this. But do you have like people that you're working with, or is Chicory have like a collective of folks that are, do you receive a lot of support, I guess, in your community? Like, do people help you out with stuff?
Yeah, for sure. This year I helped organize with an amazing herbalist, Eleni Cruz, and another person, her name's Antoinette, and we helped Eleni put together the New Orleans herb gathering. So that was like a lot. Most of the teachers that we had, some teachers that came in from out of state, but many of those teachers that were a part of that event were like local, and so like in that sense, like I was working with them collectively to like put this together. And then I also have done kind of a little project with another organization here in the city called Solitary Gardens, which is like really amazing. You should look it up. But it's this multimedia artist. Her name is Jackie Samal, and so she has these like it's in the lower ninth ward, and she has these garden beds that are the exact dimensions of solitary confinement cells. And like you can't even grow, she doesn't grow plants where the bed, the toilet, and the desk would be. And so the gardens are based on correspondence letters from people who are serving like solitary, or like, or who are in solitary confinement, or who are serving like life sentences. And like most, and a lot of them are in Angola. And so it's like raising awareness around like what would the world look, what would the landscape look like without prisons, but also like it's finding beauty and like these beautiful gardens, but realizing that these gardens are also representing dreams of people who will never actually be able to see these to fruition because they're like incarcerated, pretty much for the rest of their lives. And so I did some work with her. I went into the gardens, spent some time there, and I harvested some lemon balm, and I was able to like make some lemon balm glycerite. And so like I'll be donating some bottles to her, for her prisoner. She has a prisoner's apothecary, so like it basically is giving medicine to like families and folks that are either incarcerated or impacted by incarceration. So I hope to continue doing more work for work with Solitary Gardens. And then this summer I was able to like harvest some more herbs and like make some infused oils that are being sold through a local shop. And so I'm gonna donate like part of, and I donated part of like when I sold it to the store, I donated like part of the proceeds like to the bail fund and stuff like that. So in that way, I guess it's like collaborative. Like I hope to do the herb gathering again next year, and like continue to work with Solitary Gardens, and continue to like invite more people and let more people know about the New Orleans Safety and Freedom Fund.
Amazing. That is such that the Solitary Garden sounds like such a powerful project. I'm gonna have to get like some info from you so I can like put all this, so people want to learn more, they can like I'll have it in the show notes. I was wondering kind of like at you've talked a little bit about like the Angola penitentiary and how it's really brutal. Is it, and obviously like you're super busy, so like I know I don't, you probably can't take on anything, but I'm wondering if people are able to like if they have any programs where people are able to go into the prison and do any.
There is actually, there's actually something they do every year called NOLA to Angola, and so it's a bike ride, and you can bike basically from New, it's a 2-day bike ride. You can bike from New Orleans to Angola, but it raises money so that like it pays for like buses for family members of incarcerated folks, so that they're able to actually like visit people who are like visit their family members who are incarcerated in Angola. So there are ways that like people can get involved or like donate to that and help out with that for sure. And there's also a museum here locally in the past, and currently, I think in their permanent collection, they like have some artworks that were made by some like former like inmates at Angola. But just like, and they had a show, I think it was some, basically it was about the industrial prison complex, but it was just like like they did a really great job of like just highlighting how like harmful and like just kind of like this sort of like sordid history that the Angola Penitentiary has. And they recently, like I think a couple years ago, they had a show where they were just like, they were just like, the whole, it was just like art centered around like how, like just how like just jails and just like incarceration and just like how like it just like it just has like these like really far reaching ramifications and like negative impact from like the way that the, you know, the companies that build these prisons, like how that impacts the environment down to like, you know, how it's like, you know biased and like impacting like communities and things like that. So for sure.
Wow. I always thought like my impression of New Orleans was always like, obviously there's a lot of history of oppression and violence, but also like amazing grassroots community movements.
For sure. Yeah. There's definitely a lot of like cool places. And like, even like, and there's other organizations doing things with bail too. Like there's Women with a Vision, and they're a grassroots organization that's been around for over 25 years. And it's mostly led by Black women in the community here. And they help children, women and children and families that are impacted by AIDS and HIV, but they also have done things like the mother's bailout on Mother's Day, where they you know, help bail out moms for, you know, on Mother's Day, like they raise funds too, so to help out. So there's definitely like a lot of, so it's like, it's interesting. It's like, even though there's like a lot of gentrification and there's like this, you know, long, it's the South, so obviously there's like a long-standing history of like racism. I mean, like, I mean, talking about the monuments, right? Like that could be like a whole conversation, like a whole another 1 hour interview for that. But like, so even though there is this like, you know, kind of history that exists here, there's a lot of like resistance against that, I think, because of that. So it is, I don't know, I think in that way kind of unique.
Yeah, amazing. I love this. I love hearing about everything happening. It's, you know, like everything, your work is really important, and I'm really excited to be having this conversation with you. And as we're kind of like coming on to an hour, which it's crazy, it went by really fast. Do you want to, is there anything kind of that you wanted to say that we haven't gone over yet?
Not really, other than just like, I would encourage anyone who's listening to just educate yourself more about bail in the whatever city or district that you live in. I think to, when you purchase an herb book, to really question the narrative and the perspective of from which that's coming from, to seek more diverse perspectives in the herb books and zines that you purchase, and to, you know, to just support, you know, support creatives of color. I mean, you know, especially ones who are out here doing emotional labor to try to, you know, make this world a more fair and like equitable place. That, so for sure, I guess.
Absolutely. Thank you. So where can folks find you? Like if they want to learn more about you, if they want to support your work, where's the best place for people to connect with you?
The best place to connect with me is on my Instagram. I'm pretty active on there. So, and my Instagram handle is just chicoryzine, all one word, no underscore, anything like that. And my email address, if anyone is interested in like talking more, is chicoryzine@gmail.com. And so, yeah, those are probably the two best places to reach me. And then on my Instagram page, there has a link to like my website and like more information and stuff if people are interested.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me for the podcast. I really, really appreciate it, and really am honoring just your work and all that you do.
No problem.
Listening to the Rise Up Good Witch podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review in iTunes and check out www.riseupgoodwitch.com for more information about tarot readings and the apothecary.